Again, this is a series in the Federal Facility Academy webinars. If you complete all 11, and also you complete the 3-day in person or the 3-day online course, you would be eligible to receive the certificate, the overall certificate for completing the entire series, and then the 3-day course, acknowledging your dedication to learning about federal facilities. Now, the 3-day course is only available for those that are in the federal government or the state government working with federal facilities. So if unfortunately, if you're in academia, if you're a contractor engineering firm, you would not be eligible for the total certificate, being it including that 3-day course. All right, next slide, please. So you'll attend, as I mentioned at the end. Shelly or I will mention how to get your certificate for this course. I already mentioned the 3-day course. We'll provide the dates for that 3-day course if you are not tracking the dates for the 3-day course in August and in November. The online course, as you know, is open to the public. And as I mentioned, the in-person class is only for a selected population. All right, next slide. I stand corrected. We do. This is information here. So the 3-day course in person is in August in San Francisco. And then the 3-day online course will be in November. And the 3-day online course is instructor led. All right. Next slide, please. All right. So this brings us to why we are here today. This is the Federal Facilities Online Academy 5-year review. And at this time, we'll be turning it over to our three amazing instructors. And the lead instructor will take over, and then she'll guide you through today's webinar.
Great, next slide. Great. Well, good afternoon. My name is Jana Dawson. I'm an RPM in Region 4. I've worked for EPA for about 5.5 years. I'm currently in the Federal Facilities Branch, providing oversight of Department of Energy facilities. I started my career as an analytical and radiological chemist and then an environmental program manager working at a DOE facility. It was Rocky Flats in Golden, Colorado. And then I moved on to working as a consultant on RCRA and CERCLA compliance issues at various federal facilities, specializing in consulting on radiological issues. So myself and our other two instructors will be providing this information today, Haley Pearson and Jennifer Edwards. And I'm going to turn it over to them so they can introduce themselves as well.
Hi there. My name is Haley Pryson. I'm very excited to be here with you again for one of these federal facility webinars. I have been with EPA for a little over 2.5 years. Initially, I was in FFRO, which was the Federal Facility Restoration and Reuse Office. Since then, we've had a reorganization within our branch of EPA, and I am located within OSEM, and I am in the Cleanup Implementation Branch. Previously to my 3 years at EPA, I finished my master's degree at Indiana University in environmental studies, focusing on natural resource conservation and management, as well as environmental law and policy. Following that, I did a year as a crew lead doing environmental restoration work out of Seattle in the Puget Sound region. Actually, some of those were on former Superfund sites working on the Duwamish River and the a watershed in Tacoma, Washington. I see those of you who said your favorite tall structure was the Space Needle. Good, big fan of that as well. And then I was working with a couple different city governments, one in Bloomington, Indiana, doing community engagement work, and then did was a supervisor for an environmental program within Bellevue, Washington. So that's a little bit about my history, and I will pass it over to Jen.
Hi, good afternoon. Excited to be here. My name is Jen Edwards. I work in the same branch as Haley in the Superfund program at EPA in the cleanup implementation branch. My focus has historically been 5-year reviews in general, but mainly private side 5-year reviews, coordinating with Haley and others on federal facility work. I have been in the Superfund program and at EPA for more than 17 years. Pretty much doing the same work the whole time, a few short jaunts as an RPM in Region 10, and then in our financial office here at EPA. Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, we'll go ahead and start the instruction. I did want to mention real quick that if you have questions, please type them in the Q&A and we will respond to those, as soon as we can. Sometimes, in some instances, it may be at the very end of the webinar, but we will make every attempt to respond to all of those. All right, so 5-year reviews are conducted to assess the progress and effectiveness of cleanup efforts at national priority list sites over time to ensure the protective measures put in place under the CERCLA process remain protective, such that sites do not pose risks to human health and the environment. Next slide, please. Okay, so the agenda for today is listed here. First, we're going to talk about 5-year review as far as the purpose and the regulatory context. Next, how to review a 5-year review, the community involvement requirements for 5-year reviews, protectiveness statements. We'll conduct a case study that you'll get to participate in. Then we'll talk about the independent findings and finally addressing emerging contaminants. All right, next slide, please. And I'm going to turn it over to our webinar group to walk you through this poll. And I think Shelley might be leading us through this.
Sorry about that. So, if you could please enter in the Q&A, what experiences have you had with 5-year reviews at federal facility Superfund sites? Please enter briefly your comments about that. Something short and sweet. Thank you. Okay, we're receiving various answers. Some say none, prepared to, reviewing them, NJ State PM, none, some independent assessment, and one FYR. Periodically, as a consultant supporting clients, fairly familiar with FYRs at FF, written FYRs, and headquarters CIB FYR coordinator, none yet. Writing tests for eco portions of 5-year review at my site, industrial cleanup and restoration. Sometimes I feel like they just update the past 5-year review and don't really look at the issues again properly. I have completed one review for the Paducah gaseous diffusion plant in Paducah, Kentucky. I work on them every year that there is a FFF FYR. Periodically with federal facilities for 3 years now, and periodically CFYR.
And
Still new and learning.
I can do a few, Shelley.
Okay.
Seen a few as a state regulator, reviewer of QAPs, former Army Air Force bases, few as a state regulator. I've done a lot working with Monica McCady, reviewed 5 reviews for approximately 9 years. Yeah, that's it. So it's across the horizon as far as experience years. Someone mentioned NASA. and they're still coming in. So I guess we'll go ahead and stop at this time.
Okay, great. Thank you for that information. We can go ahead and move on. Great. Okay, so next we're going to talk about the regulatory context of 5-year reviews. Next slide, please. This slide lists the legal requirements that are the basis for conducting the 5-year reviews under CERCLA and the National Contingency Plan. The statute for 5-year review requirement is found in CERCLA Section 121C, and it mandates that the remedial action must be reviewed every 5 years if there are hazardous substances left in place, and that it also allows for the evaluation and ongoing consideration of the continued protectiveness of human health and the environment. The statute is codified in the NCP in 40 CFR Part 300.430 F42, and it more specifically explains the requirement for the lead agency to conduct these reviews when contamination remains above levels safe for unlimited use and unrestricted exposure. These reviews are critical for assessing the effectiveness of the cleanup actions over time and determining if further or alternate remediation or controls are necessary to maintain the protectiveness under CERCLA. All right, next slide, please. As I mentioned, a 5-year review should determine whether the remedy at a site is or upon completion will be protective of human health and the environment over time. Follow-up actions should be identified for any recommendations that ensure protectiveness. So the 5-year review addresses the following technical questions. Is the remedy functioning as intended by the decision document? Are the exposure assumptions, toxicity data, cleanup levels, and remedial action objectives, or RAOs, used at the time of the remedy still valid? Has any other information come to light that could call into question the protectiveness of the remedy? A content checklist for 5-year review reports and a 5-year review site inspection checklist exist to guide the information that should be gathered. The checklist and guidance can be found in the 2001 5-year review guidance issued by EPA. And we can put a link to that information in the Q&A. But also, just so you know, if you just Google on EPA 5-year review guidance, it'll be easy to find. Next slide, please. Okay, so consistent with Executive Order 12580, other federal facilities are responsible for ensuring that 5-year reviews are conducted at sites where required or appropriate. For federal facility sites, the lead agency conducts the review, prepares the report, and submits the report to EPA and state regulators as appropriate for review and comment. The lead agency is responsible for ensuring that the recommendations and follow-up actions in the report are completed. Additional information can also be found at EPA's website for Superfund 5-year reviews. And again, if you search on EPA Superfund 5-year reviews, you will find all of those guidance documents. Okay, next slide, please. So, in August of 2011, EPA issued the Program Priorities Memorandum for Federal Facility 5-year reviews. So, this memorandum was generated to help EPA RPMs improve the timeliness of the 5-year review process and the follow-through on issues at these federal facility sites. Being aware of this policy can help you understand the EPA RPM's role in this process as they review and submit comments on the 5-year review reports. So the policy provides guidance for the following items. First, how to determine whether to concur or not on the protectiveness determination that the facility has provided for specific operable units. The RPM is encouraged to do this whether or not the report is signed and completed by the other federal agency. Next, write a concurrence or non-concurrence letter to the other federal agency following the completion of the review. Then track and update the issues and recommendations affecting the protectiveness identification or evaluation. And finally, identify the next 5-year review due dates and generate these due dates in a document for all future 5-year reviews based on the statutory review timeframe. This guarantees that the 5-year reviews are completed at least once every 5 years. And for more information, you can consult the actual guidance document, August 2011 Program Priorities Memorandum for Federal Facility 5-Year Reviews. And again, you can Google on those keywords and you will find that in a web search. So I will now let Haley take the floor. She's going to provide you with more information on how to review a 5-year review document. Next slide.
Perfect. Hello. So as Jana said, we're going to be talking about this entire process. It can be, very long and scary at first, but hopefully this can offer some at least guidance on where you can go to find more information throughout this whole process and a little bit of what this process will look like. Next slide, please. Cool. So the review writer from the lead federal agency should use the 2001 Comprehensive 5-Year Review Guidance as a guide throughout the 5-year review process. And again, there are links on this slide here that you can use to find all of these guidances that we are mentioning throughout this today. So since 2001, EPA has also issued several updates and supplemental guidance. These supplements offer helpful guidance for addressing substantive issues and concerns. These also include, we have templates for these and trying to create these to make the process as easy and seamless as possible, especially when dealing with, multiple contractors. Visit the Cleanups at Federal Facilities webpage linked here to stay up to date on tools and training resources. Also, be sure to check with your agency for any agency-specific 5-year review tools and guidance documents. When starting this whole process for 5-year reviews, the lead federal agency project manager should contact the state RPM and technical specialists in their agency to stay up to date on any emerging contaminants, exposure pathways, and state and federal standards. Also, be sure to check original sources such as the Integrated Risk Information System, IRIS, and relevant state websites as well. Early on, the 5-year review team should identify any new or changed regulations, including ARRs, which are those applicable or relevant and appropriate requirements, and seek agreement on whether they impact the protectiveness or the remedy. Next slide, please. Perfect. So EPA's involvement as far as 5-year reviews looks different within the federal facility program as opposed to private Superfund sites. So this is going to talk a little bit about what the process looks like for federal facilities. So first, the lead federal agency submits a draft 5-year review report to the regulatory agencies for comment. The amount of review time for the regulatory agencies is usually based on the site's FFA. Generally, the regulatory agencies will have 60 days for review and submitting those comments. Another 45 to 60 days is generally allowed for the final review, depending on the terms of document review under the FFA. During the review time, the EPA RPM will solicit comments from technical, legal, and headquarters staff. These comments will be consolidated by the RPM and sent to the lead federal agency. The lead agency will usually respond to comments and generate a final draft that reflects the regulator comments that were provided. The EPA RPM will review the final draft and submit any comments back to the lead federal agency. Once all of those comments are addressed, the document will be finalized by the lead federal agency and circulated among the lead agency for signature. Depending on the required authority, EPA may need to sign the report and write a concurrence letter regarding the protectiveness determinations. In the concurrence letter, EPA will concur or non-concur on the protectiveness statement for each OU, identify the issues that will be tracked in SEMS, and state the due date for the next review based on the statutory requirement of a 5-year review due no less than once every 5 years. If the federal agency and EPA are not able to agree on the protectiveness of the remedy, EPA may issue an independent assessment of the protectiveness of the remedy. We'll be talking about those later on in the presentation. Again, that's one of those big differences between 5-year reviews on the federal facility side and the private side of things. So for complex sites with multiple OUs, which are those operable units, so kind of those smaller sections of the site, obtaining signatures may take many months. A schedule agreement created and agreed to by reviewers during the planning stage can ensure that draft reports are keyed into the final 5-year review report timeline. Next slide, please. So, lead agency project managers should engage the integrated project team early in the review process and encourage regular communication between all of the team members of this project. This allows for real-time input from environmental regulators, legal representatives, and others, and also helps to identify and address issues proactively instead of waiting until later on within the review process. For federal facility sites, at minimum, the lead agency should begin planning 3 years in advance of the statutory deadline to secure the funding and contract support needed to complete the review process and check the expiration of the contractor's contract. Data collection and report writing should begin at least 12 to 18 months ahead of the due date. You may need to adjust this timeline depending on the size and complexity of the site, whether you elect to have public meetings or comment periods, and any changes in site conditions such as snow that may cause delays in the review process. I know this is something that comes up a lot when it comes to like sites in Alaska where, the ground is so covered by snow and ice a lot of the year. So you really have to plan ahead on when you can get sampling and things like that done to address protectiveness for the 5-year review. Cool. Next slide, please. Cool. This table shows that not all OUs need to be evaluated during the 5-year review process. Generally, a decision document should be in place and a remedial action initiated within the OU that leaves waste in place. If the OU has no decision document, then a remedy has not been selected and the evaluation is not required. If an RA start has not occurred at an NPL site requiring a statutory review, a review is not required. If the criteria for a review have been met anywhere in the OU, an evaluation should take place and a protectiveness statement issued. When there are OU subareas suitable for UUUE, they can be carved out of the evaluations. So UUUE, which is that unlimited use and unrestricted exposure, means that the selected remedy will place no restrictions on the potential use of the land or other natural resources. Unless an OU meets UUUE criteria, it should be evaluated once the trigger for evaluation is met. If an OU is not UUUE at the time of the ROD decision document, an evaluation should take place and a protectiveness statement issued. The first 5-year review report after the OU meets UUUE conditions should include an evaluation that supports this and include a protectiveness statement for that OU. The report should state that this is the last time that that OU will be evaluated in a 5-year review. The OU would not be part of future evaluations unless toxicity or other factors affecting UUUE are no longer valid. Discretionary evaluations may be performed at OUs where they are not required by CERCLA state or statute or policy. These are performed at the discretion of the lead federal agency. For example, where a 5-year review is required under a RCRA corrective action. No further action and no further remedial action planned does not mean UUUE. OUs deleted from the NPL will still need evaluation if they are not UUUE. Next slide, please. Cool. So the next two slides are going to talk about some common comments that are placed on those draft federal facility 5-year reviews once they are received from EPA's end of things. So again, these are not present on all sites, but these are some of the more common comments that are received by the lead federal agency. The top five comments all relate to the protectiveness statement. The purpose of the 5-year review is to assess the protectiveness of a remedy. Therefore, assessing, choosing, supporting, and writing protectiveness statements correctly is a main focus for reviewers of 5-year review reports. First, there should be one protectiveness statement for every OU evaluated during the review process. Not every OU requires an evaluation, as we learned in the slide before. Second, a protectiveness statement is not needed if certain criteria are met, such as OUs where remedial action has not begun, or an OU was UUUE in the last 5-year review and remains UUUE. So this means that the selected remedy it will place no restrictions on the potential use of land or other natural resources in that specific area. So the third comment, OUs still under construction need a protectiveness statement in a statutory review. And policy reviews follow on construction activities after a ROD amendment will also get a review. The will be protective statement may apply. Fourth, protectiveness statements should be consistent with 5-year review guidance, Exhibit 4-6, and the 2012 OSWER memorandum. 5-year review writers often choose the wrong protectiveness statement. Decision logic for choosing protectiveness statements will be discussed later on in the training. Fifth, once a site achieves construction complete, a site-wide protectiveness statement is issued. A site-wide protectiveness determination is required and will generally be the same protectiveness determination as the least protective OU at the site. This additional protectiveness statement should not be included until construction completion has been achieved because all site remedies may not have been selected and put in place yet. All right, next slide. Cool. So we are continuing on with some of these common comments that are received. So sixth, the report should stay focused on the protectiveness message. Distill messages from operations and maintenance, O&M, and long-term monitoring reports. Do not cut and paste, synthesize this information. Seventh, the report needs to provide adequate rationale for the protectiveness statements. A remedial action should address one or more remedial action objectives, and the technical evaluation should provide evidence that the remedial action is functioning as intended and meeting the RAOs. So the eighth comment, the technical evaluation must address RAOs or risk basis of the ROD. Because remedies are selected to meet risk-based RAOs, these should be the basis of the issues and recommendations identified in the report. Okay, ninth, the progress since last 5-year review section should include adequate information about the status of issues being tracked since the last 5-year review. The choices are continued in the next 5-year review, where the issue would be carried over into the new issues list, complete or considered and not implemented. This information is required in the Superfund Enterprise Management System, SEMS, which is EPA's data tracking and project management tool. A 10th comment, for 5-year reviews for federal facilities, EPA may only track issues that affect current or future protectiveness. Identify an issue from any missing ROD elements required for long-term protectiveness in a decision document. Consider emerging contaminants and how these chemicals may protect and how these may impact protectiveness for the site. Keeping these comments in mind, so all of these from this slide and the last slide, will help you develop streamlined 5-year review reports that are easy to read and review. Next slide, please. Cool. So this here shows just two resources that are available for further understanding of the role of headquarters. We have the memorandum on program priorities, as well as the 2018 Superfund memorandum in support for the annual report to Congress. So this is talking about the 5-year review report to Congress that is created each year. Within this list, specifically for federal facilities, something important to note is that there is a list of all of the independent findings of protectiveness that are found on any of these sites. And we'll talk further about what this means and what this list is later on in this presentation. Okay, next slide, please. All right, looking at the headquarters review process. So the Superfund program tracks and reviews all five federal facility 5-year reviews for sites on the NPL. So the review timelines, which we talked about earlier, strives to complete internal review of each draft document in 30 calendar days. The regional coordinator, as well as the 5-year review coordinator, will review, and those comments will be forwarded to the RPM. So just a quick review of things that we've talked about so far in these slides. All right, next slide, please. So a big thing that we talk about within the federal facility program at headquarters is promoting national consistency. 5-year reviews are done at sites all throughout the country, using a lot of different other federal agencies. So it's really important that we are able to promote national consistency within these reviews. 5-year reviews are a core component of long-term remedy stewardship, and that inconsistency across sites or agencies, can lead to delays, conflicting interpretation, and uneven protectiveness for sites. EPA headquarters uses a structured review method when evaluating draft 5-year review reports. A systematic approach helps ensure that criteria is applied the same way for reports from all regions, as well as reports coming from all different other federal agencies. In addition, EPA continually evaluates issues that appear frequently within 5-year reviews throughout regions. This allows for opportunities to clarify guidance, identify trends within common errors, and develop and improve training materials for future 5-year reviews. Right, next slide, please. Cool. So we're going to talk briefly about state role and responsibilities. So the state role and responsibilities are described in a guidance that will be linked below. The emphasis is on ongoing partnerships and involvement of the states in the 5-year review process and resolution of questions and concerns at the earliest possible time. Best practices are to seek and resolve questions and comments informally whenever possible. I think when dealing with the states and looking at how that communication should go, I think it's kind of similar to the community involvement standard of early and often, so including them throughout this entire process. Awesome. Next slide. Cool. So, speaking of community involvement, we're going to be briefly talking about community involvement within federal facility 5-year reviews. We'll move to the next slide, which is going to be a short 3-minute video. So, stay, hold tight. It might take us just a moment to get this shared, but we will watch this video and touch base after.
While we're queuing up the video, I just want to say don't forget to utilize the Q&A room to drop any questions that you may have. You don't have to wait and until the end, or if there's a certain speaker you're waiting on hearing from, you can still pop in those questions into the Q&A at any time.
The United States government operates thousands of facilities to promote the security and welfare of American citizens. Facilities like military bases and weapons plants handle hazardous materials. Laws require the government to address these hazards to make sure these materials don't endanger human health or the environment. Sometimes the government can clean up contaminants entirely. In other cases, the government leaves contaminants in place but finds solutions to protect the public from any hazards. Congress has mandated that these federal sites must be reviewed every 5 years to ensure the remedies are working properly. The 5-year review documents ongoing monitoring and maintenance activities and evaluates whether on-site contaminants pose a health risk. This site used to hold hazardous waste from nearby Andrews Air Force Base. Today, workers are testing groundwater for contamination left behind.
The 5-year review is a way to step back out of all the details that occur at a hazardous waste cleanup site and really assess whether the remedy that we've installed is effective at protecting human health and the environment.
To conduct a 5-year review, Connolly first assesses the different hazards and remedies on the site. He analyzes the levels of contaminants. He may conduct a site inspection and interview community members or site workers. He then compiles all this information into the 5-year review report.
The 5-year review identifies the environmental problem, the decisions that have been made to correct it, and assesses whether or not the remedy is effective.
Preparing the report is the responsibility of each facility's owner, like the Department of Defense or Department of Energy. Representatives from the Environmental Protection Agency and state or tribal authorities review the report to provide input and ensure checks and balances in the review process.
The EPA representative looks at the five-year review and either confirms the lead agency's findings or can issue an independent assessment and a set of findings.
Lenny Siegel runs a nonprofit that promotes public involvement in federal facilities.
Community members have an important role to play at contamination sites for two real reasons. One is they're the people who are impacted. They drink the water, they breathe the air, they use the land. It affects their health, their property values. Secondly, they're the people who've been there all along and are going to be there in the future. They know more about these sites often than the regulators and responsible parties.
Public notices alert community members when a five-year review is getting underway and when the report is released. In some cases, site managers request interviews with community members.
You can't wait until after the whole thing's done to give your opinion. You've got to be there when the people from the government are there to ask questions.
I think it should be an ongoing dialogue because this is a long-term process from what I understand. And, you know, we've had Andrew representatives at our association meetings two or three times already. We plan to have them again. The members want to know. They want to know what's took place and how successful actually it's been.
When the report is released, site managers may hold public meetings to explain the report's findings.
Community members not only need to give input to the process, but they need to know the results. In my community, a five-year review actually led to new cleanup questions and new cleanup technologies. And if you don't know what the review has found, you don't know what's going to come next.
To find out what's next at a site near you, contact your site's project manager. For more information about five-year reviews, visit the EPA Five-Year Review website.
Awesome. Thank you so much for playing that video. I am going to get started on the text for the next slide while we wait for the screen to be pulled back up. I think it's really awesome seeing that video, especially as someone that, you know, works out of the headquarters office who sometimes feels a bit removed from the community. And, you know, there's multiple steps between us and the community that we're really helping to work for. So I particularly enjoy that video and hope that it was meaningful for you guys too. Cool. So back on the slide. So no community involvement activities during the five-year review are mandated in CERCLA or addressed in the NCP. For information on recommended community involvement activities during the five-year review process, see Appendix A of the 2001 Comprehensive Five-Year Review Guidance. So some of these recommended ways of communicating are to inform the community and other potentially interested parties that a five-year review will be conducted using the most appropriate communication method or activity for that specific community. Informing the community and other potentially interested party that a five-year review was conducted at the site, or to prepare a brief summary of the results, inform the community that the five-year review report is completed and available for review, post the report on site webpage, and make the report and summary available to the public in the information repository for that specific site. A public notice in a local newspaper is the most common way to notify the community that you are preparing to conduct a five-year review at a nearby federal facility. You can also use your facility or installations webpage and local radio or TV stations to announce the five-year review. If your site has an active community group, you should notify the public at its next meeting. In May 2015, EPA added language to the NCP to broaden the methods by which EPA can notify the public about certain Superfund activities. There's also a 2020 Community Involvement Handbook, which we can link below, to provide information on community involvement during five-year reviews. Okay, next slide, please. Cool. So the lead federal agency project manager should work with the site community liaison on a communication strategy and notify the community about the five-year review before it begins and when it finishes. Community members may be interviewed as part of the five-year review remedy assessment. Conduct community interviews with plenty of lead time, incorporating existing public opinions already provided on remedy performance issues from ongoing public outreach. Focus community input on assessing remedy protectiveness, not on reopening the remedy decision. Because community members live near these sites, they can offer valuable input about the day-to-day realities at a site and play an important role for the long-term stewardship of federal facility sites. Adjacent property owners or owners of off-site property that may be affected by contamination can be especially helpful to interview. Local government officials may need to be interviewed to determine if institutional controls are implemented properly. The five-year review interagency workgroup developed a set of five-year review community tools to help site managers at federal facilities explain the purpose and findings of a five-year review to surrounding communities. Community meetings are a great platform for sharing the short video and training module. Once you have completed the five-year review at that site, a new fact sheet template can help you organize and summarize the most important five-year review findings to share with the community. The fact sheet can also be distributed at community public meetings. And these tools are available publicly on the FedPAC five-year review federal facility cleanups page at epa.gov that has been mentioned a few times now. And we'll go on to the next slide, which just shows an example of a fact sheet that could accompany posting about a five-year review using the available online tools. So we'll give just a second for y'all to review that, and then I will pass it over to Jen for protectiveness statements.
Great, thank you, Haley. Can we move to the next slide? All right, so I'm gonna go through protectiveness statements and some information that we hope will be useful in helping you determine protectiveness in five-year reviews. Next slide, please. All right, so it's important when conducting a five-year review that you're keeping in mind that the purpose of the five-year review is to determine the protectiveness of the remedy, and then also to ensure that the data and information provided in the five-year review document supports the protectiveness statements. Here we talk about the critical information path, which can be seen as a thread of thought emphasizing the protectiveness statement, you know, running through the five-year review report. In order to understand if the remedy is protective and functioning as intended, we need to understand what are the objectives of that remedy. And that's where we look to the remedial action objectives for that information. The remedial action objectives can help you understand how to focus the message and identify what information and data may be needed to support your protectiveness determination. We'll talk more on this, but the technical assessment is the main meat of the five-year review report, where you're going to go through some questions that will help you get to a determination of protectiveness. Five-year review report reviewers, such as EPA and state project managers, will look to see if the RAOs and the technical assessment tell a complete story and ensure that the two's recommendations and protectiveness statements are well supported. So the REOs, being the first step of the critical information path, come from the decision document and should already include information such as risk drivers, that being the media, the contaminants of concern, the exposure pathways, and the receptors. The decision document, you know, will also identify the current and reasonably anticipated future land use, and the purpose of the action will also be identified. Is the action meant to prevent or minimize risks or migration of contaminants or things like that, or to restore or eliminate those? You will need to remember to keep these in mind as we move on to the technical evaluation questions, A, B, and C. More information on assessing protectiveness is in the 2001 five-year review guidance, which we've talked about before and will continue mentioning. Sorry, can you move to the next slide, please? I spoke through this slide without telling you to advance, so apologies to everyone for that. I'll give you a moment to just look at it, but this is what I just spoke through. All right, next slide, please. All right, the technical assessment. So the five-year review guidance lays out three questions that you're going to ask in the five-year review. Question A asks if the remedy is functioning as intended by site decision documents. It's important to consider the remedial action objectives included in those site decision documents when you're thinking about the remedy components and whether they're functioning as intended. You will be using the information you gathered through the five-year review process, through any sampling data, operation and maintenance reports that have been received, any community interviews, or information that you received from site operators, and information from your five-year review site inspection to answer this question. Question B asks if the exposure assumptions, toxicity data, cleanup levels, and remedial action objectives used at the time of remedy selection are still valid. You will need to consider whether there have been changes in toxicity, changes in land use or exposure pathways, any changes in applicable or relevant and appropriate requirements since the time of your decision document, and you'll use that information to help you answer question B. Question C is basically a sweep of a question. Is there anything else that could impact protectiveness that you should consider? So if there's something else happening that you did not consider as part of question A or question B, question C gives you the opportunity to determine whether there are things that impact protectiveness. As going through the technical assessment, you should consider using EPA's regional screening levels to help you understand where you may need to look further into toxicity changes, talking with your agency, toxicologist, or other risk assessment points of contact, visiting the federal facility and EPA, other EPA web pages for updates on new and emerging contaminants, visiting state agency web pages to look for any changes in toxicity or cleanup levels involving state regulators. Again, all of these changes need to be viewed in light of a protectiveness determination and the existing REOs to determine whether they will be protective. A change alone may not impact protectiveness. You must consider whether it may result in unacceptable risk or a new exposure pathway, or something that is not already being addressed. All right, next slide, please. All right, so there are five protectiveness determinations identified in EPA guidance that can be identified for a remedy during the five-year review. Protective, hopefully self-explanatory, the remedy is operating completed and no unacceptable exposures have been identified, and no operating remedies are working to continue to meet REOs in the long term. Will be protective is a determination for remedies that are under construction. So as I think Jana introduced in the beginning, CERCLA 121 identifies that five-year reviews are triggered by the initiation of the remedial action. Sometimes we are doing five-year reviews on remedies that are under construction. What you're doing for will be protective is you're assessing, the portion of the remedy in place at the time and assessing whether that remedy will be protective upon completion based on what you know about the implementation of that remedy to date. Protective in the short term. In this instance, you have enough information to understand that there are not current unacceptable exposures occurring, but there are issues and follow-up actions that need to be taken to ensure the remedy remains protective in the long term. So you need to ensure that those items that need to be addressed to ensure long-term protectiveness are clearly identified in the five-year review and in the protectiveness determination. Protectiveness deferred. So these are situations where you do not have enough information to understand whether current unacceptable exposures are occurring, and you need to gather additional information to make that determination. In the five-year review, you should clearly lay out what information is missing and what needs to be collected, and also ensure that a time frame to obtain the necessary information is provided. So not protective. This is a situation where you have enough information to determine that there are current unacceptable exposures occurring and there are follow-up actions that need to be taken to achieve protectiveness. You need to ensure that you clearly identify what actions are necessary to achieve protectiveness and ensure that that can be taken within a timely manner, including a timeframe for completion in the five-year review document. Next slide, please. All right, I will turn it over for a poll, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. We have a poll. And the poll will be launched in probably about 30 seconds, but the poll is launched. So I'll read it out. Have you worked on a federal facility five-year review where the determination was protectiveness deferred? What was the cause for making that determination? At any time, you can go ahead and pin in your results. Is it A, sampling needed to confirm exposure pathways? Is it B, not contaminated cleanup levels were issue and need to be evaluation? C, emergent contaminants need to be investigated. D, other. So how are we looking, Ms. Shelley, as far as responses coming in?
Okay, so we've got trending right now. We've got 38% emerging contaminants need to be investigated, number C, followed behind by other at 35%. And sampling needs to be confirmed exposure pathways, I didn't even talk right, 17%. And last is new contaminant cleanup levels were issued and need to be evaluated. So we'll let it go for a few more seconds here. Countdown, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We've received about 82 responses and share the results.
And while the results are being sharing, can you put in this is for the participants, can you put in a couple of examples when you say other, since we have 37% other, can you drop in the Q&A, you know, what are those examples of others so the instructors can possibly come back and address that or emphasize that to everyone? If Jen is good with the poll, we can go ahead and close it.
Yep, that's great. Thank you. Okay, thank you for moving on. I see a couple others coming in. I see some with issues of performance of the remedy or failure of the remedy to perform, and then asbestos as a potential new concern. There are, things that come up that could cause us to defer. All right, so the next slide, choosing a protectiveness determination, is built off of the 2001 Comprehensive Five-Year Review Guidance to help give some guidance of a pathway to making a protectiveness determination and help identify what one may be based on the information you have available to you as you answer the technical assessment questions A, B, and C. So I will go back to, some of our earlier parts of this training talking about, this blue box here that says trigger met. That's talking about the five-year review trigger. So do you have a circular record of a decision? Have you started a remedial action? And is that OU that remedial action is at suitable for UU, UE, or not? So if you have not met that trigger and a five-year review is not required, you do not need to make a protectiveness determination for an OU. However, if you are, as we talked about, follow through on use your REOs to guide you through the process here. If you have a remedy that is under construction, you can consider Actually, for both of these, under construction or completed and operating, you're first going to ask yourself the question, do you have enough information about the current unacceptable exposures and whether you have enough information to know whether any are occurring or not? If you have enough information about them, you can move on to determining whether you have issues that need to be addressed in the long term to ensure REOs are met, or whether your remedy may be protective if you do not have issues that need to be addressed in the long term. So it's important to look through the types of information that you need in order to get yourself to a remedy protectiveness determination. For reviewers of five-year reviews, they will ensure that language for the protectiveness statement follows wording in yet another guidance by EPA from September 2012, which is called the Clarifying Protectiveness Determinations Memo. That helps guide through some of what I was saying earlier about which protectiveness determinations do you need to identify your follow-up actions and timeframes in. It's important to remember that you need to include one protectiveness statement for each OU that is triggered into five-year reviews and being assessed in the five-year review. The five-year review document, including the technical assessment, needs to provide adequate support for the determination. You can do that by answering the three questions and including the backup information in the five-year review itself. You can also, cite and link to supporting reports and resources and include appendices as appropriate. Next slide, please. Okay, so I'm not sure if we have a poll for this one or if I'm just going to read it and have you answer in the QA. Can I check whether we have a poll to launch?
Jen, go ahead and read it in the Q&A. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, sure. All right, so this is an apply your understanding. We're going to ask you what protectiveness determination should be assigned to this OU. So OU1 is preparing for its second five-year review. The ROD was issued in 2015. The cleanup level for the primary contaminant of concern became more stringent in 2022. Based on the existing data, COC concentrations in soil may exceed the new cleanup level. After the REOs were met, sampling and institutional controls were no longer required for this specific remedy. It is unknown if the groundwater is being used. The other federal agency concludes that the remedy is still protective. Okay, there we have a poll launched for you to vote whether you think this situation would be protective determination, protective in the short term, protectiveness deferred, or not protective.
So far, what we have trending is protectiveness deferred at 66%. I'll let it go for a few more seconds. I'm going to count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And here's the results.
Okay. I see protectiveness deferred. Yes. For this example, there is some uncertainty whether the concentrations may exceed the new cleanup level. And so there is some unknown information that should be gathered and determine if the new cleanup level should be adopted and if the remedy needs to be modified for that. So. Great, thank you. I did see, I want to make sure I didn't misstate anything because I saw a question in the Q&A. We do not recommend defaulting to not protective if there are any exposures. I tend to use the term unacceptable exposures, and I'm sorry if that's my shorthand that I should have explained. Unacceptable exposures would be exposures that were identified through the risk assessment and the cleanup level you know, selected in the record of decision that are exposures that we would consider to pose a protectiveness risk based on the decision documents. Okay, so the next slide, I am going to talk a little bit about if you're reviewing a five-year review, what are items a reviewer should look for in a protectiveness statement? This is, again, tied to some of Haley's slides about the common comments and some important things to reinforce for you all on five-year reviews. When you're reviewing, you should look to see that there's one protectiveness statement per OU that is required in the five-year review. You should look to see whether the protectiveness determination matches the text in the document. So as you read the document and then get to the protectiveness determination, was the information in there leading to that determination? You should be looking for whether the technical assessment sufficiently supports the protectiveness statement. So is there information in the technical assessment leading to the determination chosen? Are issues identified, but the determination is protectiveness? That could mean that additional support is needed or that the protectiveness determination has not been supported adequately and a different one should be chosen. Reviewers should also be looking for, is the protectiveness statement for each OU and if applicable site-wide consistent with the issues and recommendations? Again, so if issues and recommendations are identified that could impact current or future protectiveness, is the appropriate determination selected that follows that? If the protectiveness statement considers REOs, for example, have you evaluated and shown support for progress towards achieving REOs, or were issues identified that need to be corrected in order for REOs to be achieved or maintained? Does the protectiveness follow the standard format provided in the 2001 guidance and the 2012 policy memorandum? And then if a site-wide protectiveness statement is needed, that it is included. Site-wide protectiveness statements are included when a site has achieved the site-wide milestone of construction complete, not OU. So that would be the entire CERCLA Superfund site has achieved across all OUs construction complete and achieved that site-wide milestone. Okay, next slide. All right, so this one I'm going to talk through anatomy of a protectiveness statement. So some of this is described in the 2012 clarifying memo, and that can be helpful. This is an example of a protectiveness determination of protective in the short term. So the 2012 memo will give you ideas of how to structure a protectiveness statement for all five of the protectiveness determinations. To go through this one, you know, there are several parts to the protectiveness determination, and here they are separated by color on this slide for you to view. So in the first one, you're identifying the OU that you're discussing and then giving the protectiveness determination. So for this one, the remedy currently protects human health and the environment. That is a protective in the short term statement. You are identifying what activities justify and support that statement. In this case, because land use controls to prevent groundwater use are in place and groundwater treatment will continue until concentrations throughout the plume are below the standard/MCL. For the issues that may impact long-term protectiveness, this identifies to be protective in the long term, the IC boundary should be expanded. So the last sentence there is identifying what must happen for the remedy to maintain protectiveness in the future. Next slide, please. All right, so this slide gives some examples of remedies considered not protective in these cases. Follow-up action is needed to ensure protectiveness is achieved. Again, more information can be found in the 5-year review guidances, but a couple of examples. Immediate threat is present, so there are complete exposure pathways where unacceptable risks are not being controlled, could be occurring. Migration of contaminants is uncontrolled and poses an unacceptable risk. There is potential or actual exposure clearly present or evidence of exposure. So ICs are not in place and exposure is occurring because of that. Or other, there's data showing that vapor intrusion is occurring into areas where there is a complete exposure pathway. And then remedy cannot meet a new cleanup level, and the previous cleanup level is outside the risk range. This may depend on site-specific considerations of whether there are actual exposures occurring or not in that scenario. Actual unacceptable exposure, sorry, to that level outside the risk range. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, thank you. Follow-up actions based on the 5-year review document. If a 5-year review determination is anything but protective or will be protective, then issues and recommendations to address protectiveness should be identified. If the remedy determines that changes to the selected remedy may be needed, that does need to be identified in a decision document. It could be through an ESD or a ROD amendment. You'd have to do, further evaluation to consider what those are. For federal facilities only, EPA considers 5-year review reports to be standalone primary documents or part of another related primary document that should have a schedule within the framework of the federal facilities agreement. That agreement should include site-specific 5-year review requirements, such as provisions for reviews, public participation, and addressing or resolving issues. If the remedy is not protective, again, then it may be necessary to take additional actions, that could include changes to the selected remedy. Next slide, please. Okay. So EPA monitors progress being made on issues and recommendations between 5-year reviews and updates the Superfund tracking system, the Superfund Enterprise Management System, known as SEMS, periodically. In that system, there are status updates used to identify issues and recommendations, and those are identified here. A recommendation could still be under discussion in that we are determining how to implement it. It may be ongoing that we have begun implementation but not completed yet. It's possible that what was recommended was considered and not implemented because information became available to us that meant that it was not needed, completed, which means we've been able to address that issue and addressed in the next 5-year review, which is an option only for the last update to be input when the next 5-year review is completed. And information on that issue and recommendation has been identified in that 5-year review document. Okay, next slide. All right, I am turning over to Haley, so thank you all.
Hello. So the next few slides are going to talk about independent findings. Next slide, please. As I had mentioned earlier, independent findings are something that are specific to the federal facility 5-year review process and not something that you'll find within the private side of 5-year reviews. So above shows steps throughout the concurrence process. An independent finding occurs when EPA needs to issue non-concurrence with the other federal agency's protectiveness determination or when procedural requirements are not met. On the next slide, we'll look at some common reasons why these findings occur. After the concurrence or non-concurrence letter is signed by the EPA region, the EPA RPM has 5 days to submit the data to the EPA tracking system, SEMS. Progress on implementing the issues and recommendations identified in the report are updated and discussed between EPA headquarters and the regions. The EPA RPM is responsible for updating the issues and recommendations before they are due. The EPA RPM will also revisit this information with the lead agency between 5-year reviews. We have the annual report to Congress, which was mentioned earlier in slides, which includes the protectiveness statements for each site that was due that fiscal year. EPA will also report on whether the agency made an independent assessment of the protectiveness of the remedy in that report to Congress. Next slide, please. Cool. So this slide shows some common reasons that EPA may issue one of those independent finding of protectiveness during the 5-year review process at federal facilities. As mentioned in the previous slide, an independent finding occurs when EPA cannot concur with the other federal agency's protectiveness determination. An independent finding may be required when no report is submitted by the other federal agency. Even if a report is late, EPA must still make a protectiveness determination by the statutory due date, which triggers the need for an independent assessment. This also includes when EPA does not receive the 5-year review draft in time to conduct a meaningful review and resolve the comments. Even if work is underway, EPA cannot wait beyond the legally required timeline and must issue its own determination based on the best available information. And this review process, as we talked about earlier, takes a while. So it's really important to get these drafts moving as early as possible to allow time for comments and even meetings if those are necessary to kind of talk through some of the comments that are made. In addition, EPA may issue an independent finding when it does not agree with the protectiveness determination made by the other federal agency. This can happen for several reasons, including if the report does not address emerging contaminants that may influence the protectiveness of the remedy. This can also be if a new exposure pathway has been identified that was not evaluated in the draft, or if land use controls are either not in place or not maintained. Independent findings are generally avoidable when reports are timely, complete, and aligned with guidance that is provided by EPA. When issues arise, EPA must act to ensure that protectiveness is evaluated accurately and on schedule. All right, next slide. So this information is a little bit outdated, but we actually just went through this process again within the past couple of months of kind of determining what this looks like now for us. So this chart is a federal facility review chart showing 5-year reviews that were completed for each year, including independent assessments issued as well as late reports. So we actually, in the most recent data pull that we've done for this, it actually is looking closer to 50% of these reports resulting in independent findings in more recent years than 2020. So common issues that we are hearing right now on the EPA side of things include lack of funding and staff capacity at the other federal agency level to complete reviews on the necessary schedule to avoid independent findings. So as much as possible, we work to avoid these because it does place an extra burden within the EPA RPM side of things if the report is not completed on time or done according to guidance on the other federal agency side of things. Awesome. Next slide, please. And this one is going to be a poll, I believe, passing off to Shelley for this.
Yes. So for this group poll, the question is, have you worked on a FedFAC FYR where EPA and the other federal agency disagreed on the protectiveness statement? How was this resolved? There's the poll. You can just type your answer in there. So far, we've received 6 responses. We're up to 20. Might want to let this one go a little bit longer. We're now up to 30. And we're now at 40 seconds. This poll has been open. We're up to 38. I'm going to let it go just a few more. 50 responses received so far. Okay, we're at a minute now. 51 responses received. We'll let it go a little bit longer. I'm going to go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm going to end the poll. We received 59 responses, it looks like. Hopefully, you can see the responses. Yeah, I'm not seeing any of the answers here, so not sure. I'm going to go ahead and stop sharing. I don't know if you want to go ahead and continue.
Yes, I do believe you are still on. The next four slides are further polls, Shelley. So I
Oh,
will
okay. We'll keep
passing it over
going.
to you. Yes,
All
absolutely.
right.
Thank you.
Let me go back here. Two. Okay, so the next slide. So I'm going to go ahead and start it, and I'll just read it as it's going. Scenario number one: as an EPA RPM, you received and reviewed a draft FYR report. After reviewing the document and providing the document for headquarters FFRRO review, you were able to concur with the protectiveness statements in the draft report. However, the report will not by final by the statutory due date. What are the follow-up actions for the EPA RPM? Is it A, write a concurrence letter agreeing with the federal agency protectiveness determination? B, identify issues, recommendations, and actions that will be tracked in SEMS? C, submit letter and draft report to SEMS? Or D, nothing, EPA cannot proceed until the report is finalized? Okay, so far, what's trending is write a concurrence number, letter A. Write a concurrence letter with the federal agency. We've got 41% at that now. 47, 50%. That is definitely trending, followed by 23%. Identify issues, recommendations, and actions that will be treated as SEMS. And I'm going to let this go for another. We've received 61 responses. Let's go a little bit. 71. All right. I'm going to go ahead and end in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We received a write a concurrence letter agreeing with the federal agency protectiveness determination at 53%, followed by identify issues, recommendations, and actions that will be tracked in SEMS. And third, submit letter and draft report to SEMS, and D nothing was last. EPA cannot proceed until the report is finalized. Okay, let me go back here. All right, scenario number two. This is slide 53, right? To keep track of which poll I'm on here.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay, 53. All right, 53 is launched. Okay, for scenario number two, as an EPA RPM, you received and reviewed a draft FYR report. After reviewing the document and providing the document for headquarters FFRR review, you were able to conclude that EPA does not, in capitals, agree with the protectiveness statements in the draft report. Also, the report will not be final by the statutory due date. What are the follow-up actions for the EPA RPM? Question. Is it A, make an independent finding of the protectiveness by the statutory due date, means a letter to the federal agency? Or is it B, share the draft letter with the federal agency for approval? Is it C, submit letter and draft report to SEMS? Or is D, send the draft letter to FFRRO for review before signature? Okay, so far we've received 37 responses. And overwhelmingly, we've got almost 80% make an independent finding of the protectiveness by the statutory due date letter to the federal agency is definitely trending. We've got 0 for submit letter and draft report to SEMS, 0%. 1% share the draft letter with the federal agency for approval. So item A and item D are the two that are trending. So I'm gonna this we've got 83 responses so far. So I'm gonna go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. ending the poll. And so what we received here is 84% at make an independent finding of the protectedness by the statutory due date, followed by 14% send the draft letter to FFRO for review before signature. And then third, share the draft letter with the federal agency for approval. And no one responded to submit letter and draft report to SEMS. All right, so now we're on to the third poll. Okay, so scenario number three. I'm going to go ahead and launch that. As an EPA RPM, you received a draft FYI report from the federal agency, but do not have sufficient time to conduct a review. The report will not be final by the statutory due date. What are the follow-up actions for the EPA RPM? Question mark. Is it A, make an independent finding, deferring a protectiveness determination by the statutory due date? Or is it B, share the draft letter with the federal agency for approval? C, submit letter and draft report to SEMS? Or is it D, send the draft letter to FFRO for review? Okay, trending right now, we've got 37 responses. 78% have responded with make an independent finding, deferring a protectiveness determination by the statutory due date. And overwhelmingly, that seems to be the response. Followed by send the draft letter to FFRRO review. We've got 9% of that for that answer. So far we've received 75 responses. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, ending the poll. Okay, so overwhelmingly 81%, 64 responses received for make an independent finding, deferring a protectiveness determination by the statutory due date, followed by send the draft letter to FFRRO for review, which is item D. Okay, stop sharing. All right, on to the next poll for scenario number four. So the FYR report has been finalized by the statutory due date. In later discussions, the federal agency expresses it is not willing to implement the recommendation in the five-year review report. What are the potential follow-up actions for the EPA RPM? Is it A, there is nothing EPA can do? Or B, send a letter to federal agency outlining the issues and recommendations. Seek plan of action and schedule from the federal agency. Or is it C, if progress is not made in a reasonable time, consider sending a letter requiring the actions as additional work under the Federal Facilities Agreement, subject to dispute resolution? Or is it D, EPA will do the actions themselves? All right, so far we've received 33 responses. And trending is at 63% is send a letter to federal agency outlining the issues. So that's item B. And following that is item C, if progress is not made in a reasonable time. And there are no responses for item A or D. We've received 84 responses so far. 85, I'm going to count down. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. So we received an overwhelming response to send a letter for item B, 55 responses at 64%, followed by item C, if progress is not made. That's at 35% for 30 responses, and we've received no responses to item D and one response for there's nothing EPA can do. Okay, back to you, team.
Okay. So now we're going to talk about addressing emerging contaminants. Next slide, please. So from the EPA five-year review guidance issued in 2001, on page 49, what it says is new site conditions, such as the discovery of new contaminants, can also impact the RAOs and remedy protectiveness. So under question B listed on the slide here, you should evaluate whether the RAOs in the ROD are sufficiently comprehensive to cover any new or changed conditions at the site. If a new condition at the site is not covered by the RAOs, you should recommend further investigation in the five-year review report to determine whether additional response actions are needed. So again, looking at this slide, are there new contaminants or new sources that have been identified? And then, the lead agency then can provide a broader overview of how the emergent contaminant is going to be considered. Also, were the emerging contaminants captured under that initial question, question B? Existing guidance suggests that this is most appropriate question as it addresses exposure assumptions and detection of new chemicals. The third item or question you want to ask, was it captured under the issues and recommendations in the five-year review report? If there's any follow-on sampling included, then it needs to be captured here. And four, does the emergent contaminant affect the protectiveness? Unresolved issues could mean short-term protectiveness is not sufficient, or that there's insufficient information to make a determination. And so, we also had a question in the Q&A about this issue. And if the five-year report does not sufficiently capture this information or make a protectiveness statement that EPA determines is not appropriate, then in that case, you would issue your own independent protectiveness evaluation statement in that case. So ideally, the lead agency would identify and provide information about such emergent contaminants or conditions at the site that have changed, and that would be captured appropriately. But if not, then yes, then EPA then makes their own independent assessment and issues that in a letter. So I hope that answers the question posed in the Q&A. I did include a written response. If there's any other questions, please feel free to put them in the Q&A. But that wraps up our material instruction. And I will pass it back over to Haley for some just general additional information.
All right, hello. I wanted to share some updated contact information for our five-year review coordinators here at the Federal Facility Program used to be FIFRO, and now we're kind of spread out throughout a bunch of different offices within OSIM. So if you are part of one of these regions listed, your immediate contacts will be these regional coordinators listed here, as well as myself, who is the five-year review coordinator for the Federal Facility Program, and Jill Apachin, who is my backup coordinator for the Federal Facility Program. So please reach out to any of us, and if there's something that we can't answer, we absolutely know where to point you to throughout the people on our different teams. So we are here to help, and we are excited to receive drafts from you or respond back to any questions that you have. All right, next slide. In addition, my contact is listed here, as well as Jen Edwards, who is also on this call, as she is also a five-year review coordinator within CIB, which is a cleanup implementation branch. All right, next slide, please. Cool, I'm gonna hand it back to our moderators to go over any outstanding Q&A questions. Thank you.
Okay, so if we don't get to all the questions that are in the Q&A, we will probably have somebody reach out to answer those questions if for some reason we cannot close them all out. There is an individual who had their hand up. I'm going to attempt to give you voice talk. If not, if you could type your comment, and it's Danielle. I don't know, Danielle, if you're available. I'm going to turn the mic on for you. I'm not sure this is going to work because I haven't done this before, but let's give it a try. I don't know if you want to go ahead and speak. In the meantime, so there were some comments about, I mean, there was some discussion early on at the beginning of this seminar. If you intend to receive credit for this class using via a participation certificate, you will need to go back to where you registered for the class at cluein@epa.gov. And you can go there on the registration page for this course, for this webinar. And underneath the feedback section, that's what you want to do is fill the feedback out. And then you need to make sure you use the same email address that you registered with. And then it will, the system will send you, receive an automated participation certificate that will come back to you via email. So that's how you get participation certificate for today's event. So you need to use that link. And the link is actually, I'll read it to you. It's https://www.clue-in.org/ www.clue-in.org. If I can move my screen over here, I can see it. /CONF/TIO/FFAcademy1. And that's the actual link, but you can just go visit the CLUIN page and travel to it that way. Additionally, if you're not a member of the Tech Direct, you can receive notices that come out once a month at the beginning of every month about additional webinars that have been brought up, where you can visit the webpage and find them out there. So you can subscribe to the Tech Direct and it will give you automated email information about that. Again, I want to say thank you to the instructors and participants for attending today's webinar. I think we did some great information sharing here.
Shelley, I could share a couple of questions. We've got four questions. First question is, how should or could the fact sheet be distributed? This was an earlier question, probably about an hour ago or so.
Yeah, I can take this one. So there's a few different things that can be done for this. One is providing that fact sheet online. A lot of Superfund sites on the NPL will have some kind of information repository page just for that site. So you can include it within there. If there's any kind of community group for that site, you can have physical copies provided there. Or if there is some kind of, you know, well-visited community spot, you could put some of the fact sheets there or hang them up somewhere that is readily visible for people. A lot of different options. I feel like this is a great question to discuss with the community involvement team for that specific site, as they will know how information is best given to the people at that specific community. So thank you.
Thank you, Haley.
Yeah, I was gonna.
Oh yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Ahead.
I was just gonna echo what Haley said with the community involvement team. There may also be a community involvement plan for the site, where the community involvement team has worked closely with the community to identify the best ways to communicate with them and where, and so that can be a good resource to look to as well.
Thank you, Jen and Haley. Second question: does EPA still need to produce an independent finding if the responsible party is going to be just 1 to 2 months?
Yes. Craig, I answered, you had two questions there and I answered the other one. Unfortunately, yes, the independent finding currently is still required if the draft report is going to be submitted late, especially if that is just the draft report as, you know, the comment period and everything going back and forth between EPA and the other federal agency takes kind of an extended period of time and you can't really cut short those comment periods if the report is late. So likely, even if the draft report is only submitted 1 or 2 months late, that will be pushed out even further because of everything else that has to happen throughout that process. So yes, no matter how late it is, there has to be either a final support submitted or an independent finding provided by that statutory due date for that site.
Thank you. And then there was a question about the poll questions that were shared earlier. Were the correct answers? I know that there was obviously trending a certain way, but they just wanted to find out if they were the correct answers would be shared.
I don't know the answer to that. I believe it comes out with the recording because this event has been recorded, and so you can listen to the responses to the poll questions that way. I don't believe there is something that goes back out to the participants beyond that, as far as, you know, specifically providing that data, but it will be a record within the recorded session.
Great, thank you. And then finally, is PFAS generally short-term protective without a complete investigation picture? Not sure anybody might know that answer.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
was going to say, oh,
Go ahead,
sorry.
Jen. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't know who wants to take this, but I think there is not a general recommendation. I think it is a site-specific answer, and I think you would need to understand the situation at the site, what the potential for unacceptable exposures is. And consider that when determining whether short-term protective or protectiveness deferred is appropriate, or if you have data to show an unacceptable exposure is occurring, whether it drives to not protective. I think you could have various scenarios just depending on the facts on the ground. I don't know, Jana or Haley, if you agree with that or want to add to it.
Yeah, I
Jana.
agree. Yep, go ahead, Jen.
Okay. I was gonna say, yeah, that's probably the best answer, probably even better than what I could have stated, but I will just make one quick comment. At a site that I'm working on now, we have some PFAS data, but it's not a complete picture of what's available, and so we don't have a complete risk assessment to determine to what extent it's causing a problem warranting some kind of action. So in our case, at the specific site, we've just issued an independent finding of protectiveness deferred. But it could be very site specific, as Jen said.
Thank you.
Yeah, Haley, do you have anything to add or?
Nothing additional. Just echoing what was already said, this is, very site specific. So feel free to reach out to the federal facility team at headquarters, and we can definitely help answer this question for that specific site. It's hard to answer this, I think, without all of the background for that site specifically.
Great, great. Hey, just turning over back to you, Shelley. There's no more questions in the Q&A.
No more questions in the Q&A. So thank you, everyone. Also, if you want to email the Clue-In team, our email address is at the Clue-In site, but it's clue-in@epa.gov. If there's any follow-up as a result of this webinar today, you can email us questions there. For the gentleman that had his hand up, if you want to send us a question, since we didn't get to you directly, we don't know what issue you wanted to share with us, but feel free to reach out to us on that email
Oh,
address.
we do have another question here.
Oh, okay.
What tends to happen community relations-wise when protectiveness deferred or independent is DET issued by EPA? I think that's independent determination, but it's spelled DET. But that's the question.
Yeah, I feel like this is unfortunately another one of those questions that's a little bit hard to answer generally because I think this could look different depending on the site. Specifically looking at, sometimes independent findings are made because that review is late or, is going through the comment period at headquarters. And I think often within that realm, it's not necessarily notified to the community that, hey, this is going to be a little bit late. And it really depends on how active that community is within the 5-year review process, because I know that some sites and some communities are more hands-off when it comes to that. So I would definitely say that this is kind of site specific, depending on what else is going on around the site and how, I guess, how high of a thing this is within that community's space. So another question to reach out specifically if you have a thing at a specific site. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Haley. All right, Shelley. Yeah,
Okay, again, I
we're
want
good.
to say thank you for everyone's participation. Again, don't forget if you want your participation certificate, you need to go visit the registration page where the webinars are and fill out the feedback for today's session. And just remember, you need to do that with the same email address that you registered with to receive it automatically. If you have any questions, let us know. You can email us directly at clue-in@epa.gov and have a fabulous rest of your day. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.